Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Night 3 of the Democratic National Convention saw the Minnesota Governor Tim Walz give the keynote speech to accept the nomination for Vice President. Now, it was another star-studded affair. Television icon Oprah Winfrey making a surprise appearance at the convention in her hometown of Chicago. She's avoided the political spotlight in recent years, but returned very much centre stage last night, 16 years after endorsing Barack Obama. And she lent some of her star power to Vice President Kamala Harris and her running mate, Tim Walz.
We're now so fired up, we can't wait to leave here and do something. There are people who want you to see our country as a nation of us against them. People who seek first to divide and then to conquer. But here's the thing. When we stand together, it is impossible to conquer us.
Well, Tim Walz then took to the stage where he was met with chants of coach, coach, coach. It was his first significant opportunity to introduce himself to the nation. And his speech was very heavy on his personal story, his time as a football coach, his upbringing, his enlistment in the Army National Guard, his work as a high school teacher, and his service as a congressman and governor.
So there I was, a 40-something high school teacher, with little kids, zero political experience, and no money, running in a deep red district. But you know what? Never underestimate a public school teacher.
And he also warned the crowd what another Trump presidency might look like.
When somebody takes the time to draw up a playbook, they're going to use it. And we know if these guys get back in the White House, they'll start jacking up the costs on the middle class. They'll repeal the Affordable Care Act. And they will ban abortion across this country, with or without Congress.
Well, it was then the turn of Bill Clinton, who has spoken at 13 Democratic National Conventions going back to 1976. Now, he's also just turned 78, believe it or not, and he didn't shrink from his age. Instead, he turned it into a poke at Donald Trump.
2 days ago, I turned 78, and the only personal vanity I want to assert is I'm still younger than Donald Trump. What does her opponent do with his voice? He mostly talks about himself. So the next time you hear him, don't count the lies. Count the eyes. When Kamala Harris is president, every day will begin with you, 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 you.
Marion McKeown, US correspondent with the Business Post, is with me on the line. Marion, I'm a sucker for the glitz and the glamour, you know, the Oprah, Stevie Wonder. Sounds like a great show, first and foremost.
Well, you know, they really did put on a show last night, and it was, you're right, just from an entertainment value, from a spectacle, the musical lineup, the Stevie Wonder, John Legend and Sheena E., Prince's collaborator and partner, just rocked it. It was almost like a Super Bowl performance. And then, of course, as you said, you had Oprah. And look, nobody can compete with that star power other than maybe Michelle and Barack Obama. She is unique from the second she walked on stage, and she's used it so sparingly. No, I haven't seen her at a political event since 2008. Now, the talk last night was that she has basically signed up. She's going to be a surrogate and she's going to be a fundraiser. And I think that more than probably anything else may have made the Republicans go, oh, dear God. You know, she really, like lines like she spoke about people who would have you believe that books are dangerous and assault rifles are safe. You know, she came out with zingers like that over and over, but just the charisma, it's astonishing. She really just has not lost that ability to connect, and the entire hall was just riveted. But you also mentioned, you know, they brought on, like, this is such a forward-looking convention now. I mean, almost, it's almost Joe Who at this stage, you know, two days in. But they did bring out, you know, the old grandees, and Bill Clinton, who really spoke for a long time. But, you know, nobody puts Bubba in the corner. Let's face it.
I can't get over the fact that he's 78. I mean, of course, it makes logical sense he's 78. But isn't it extraordinary that he's heading for 80 years old?
It is, but you know, Claire, he looks it,
yeah.
And he, as you said, he doesn't shy away. But he's become so frail. He's had heart problems now for 2 decades, and you can hear the tremor in his voice. But he's lost none of the mental sharpness. Like he explained it. The Clinton that I remember always, he could unknot the thorniest, most complex issue and just explain it to you in 2 or 3 sentences. And on the economic record, because forever Americans have believed that Republicans are better on the economy. And so he came out and he said, you know, I just want to share this with you. Since 1989, America has created 51 million jobs. And then he said, 50 million of those, the score is 50 Democrats, 1 Republicans. And he went, yeah, that's right. You know, that 50 million of those jobs were created by Democrats and only 1 million by Republicans. So again, boiling down job creation, the economy, all these things to 5 or 6 words almost in that. And he had the humor and, you know, he spoke about Trump sounding like a tenor warming up, me, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, and that folksy Clinton thing, like, we got a lot of hay in the barn, folks, but let's not, you know, he sounded nervous now. And almost, I saw Hillary Clinton's face when he said, let's not get overconfident. You know, we lost races that we should have won before. And, you know, she was unreadable, shall we say. But he was making the very clear point that Hillary Clinton should have won that race in 2016. They were overconfident. They never went near Michigan or Wisconsin or Pennsylvania because they thought they were in the bag. And you could hear the anxiety. And I heard that anxiety reverberating around even when I spoke to a couple of senators who were very happy. But they, you know, they were saying, this isn't in the bag. We haven't won this yet. And then, of course,
we'll come to him in a minute. But what are their fears? Is it around the candidate as opposed to the strength of Donald Trump's support?
Well, you know, I think it's probably both of those things. There's also fears about voter suppression. New laws have been introduced since 2020 in a number of red states and swing states like Georgia and Arizona that will definitely make it harder for people to vote. Things like putting, you know, fewer places to cast your ballot, which really works against working class minority people in their districts. But they're also, you know, we've heard all about Kamala Harris, and she's been elevated. And, you know, she's got so much to live up to now, because this, we have seen the amount of new talent we've seen, which is just staggering. But she's still an unknown quantity to a large degree as a presidential candidate. All eyes are on, or will be on her tonight to see how she does. But also, it's so tight and we don't, polls have been wrong in the past, they've been misleading in the past, and this is a very progressive agenda. You have every man, Tim Walz, who's a, you know, he doesn't represent as a West Coast elite or somebody who's a fet in any way. He's an ordinary man. He doesn't even own his own house. You know, he's a school teacher. But I think, and there's this real concerted effort to grab back those voters, to peel them back. But I think that, as I say, the Democrats have been burnt before when they thought they had it in the bag, and Kamala Harris is an unknown quantity largely still as a political candidate, yeah. Even though the race is 2 months away.
Now let's the election. Talk a little bit more about Tim, because Tim, as you say, is an everyman and has that wide appeal. That's why she picked him, obviously. But his son in particular, but both his children, they really stole the show last night, didn't they?
They did. And, you know, it was probably one of the most moving moments, because his son has learning disabilities. And at the end of the speech, he just jumped up and he was clapping and crying and going, shouting, "That's my dad," and pointing at his dad up there. And you could, it was such a real moment. And then he came on stage and they embraced, and they're such a likable family. He, his wife, the 2 children, and they really have put it out there that here he is, he's this school coach. And there was a lot of metaphors for that. And, you know, we're in the final quarter and we've got the ball, but we got to keep going, etc. But just the transparency of the affection within that family, and the love and the openness, you know, it there. And as you said, that was really a viral moment when his son was captured with the tears pouring down his face and the joy and the pride in his father. So, yeah, very, very relatable.
And the media coverage has been very kind to him. I was reading a piece in the New York Times about this former student of his who Tim Walz supported when he was a teacher. And this boy, he's a lawyer now, and he was gay and wanted to come out as gay, and at the time it wasn't safe to do so, and Tim stood by his side in the school and so on. So very positive stories. We hear about this every man, you know, see him fishing and with his family and different things.
Hunting, the guns,
all of that.
Yeah,
but do we know anything about his policy, his vision, what his aims are if he becomes Vice President of the United States?
Well, his policies and his visions are Kamala Harris's. He's there to support her, and he has done a really good job so far. He's become a kind of a star, an everyman star in his own right, but it's all about Kamala. Everything he says is about her, that she's ready, what she's going to do, what they're going to do. It's a progressive agenda. Their economic agenda, what we've seen so far, has got some criticism from some economists that they say their plan for building 3 million homes isn't realistic, etc. His own policies and his own agenda as governor was pretty progressive, but he got stuff done. He was regarded as a good governor. He's a very popular governor, but certainly on things like trans rights, gay rights, the cultural touchstones, if you will, he was out there leading the way on a lot of those. And as you say, even he was the person, the liaison person for the straight trans, sort of organization that was set up within his school, because he's a straight talking, plain dealing football coach. And he said, look, I'm the guy to do it. So he's not afraid to step into that role. But I think that the policies, because this is, and this does happen at conventions, they don't talk policy, they allow the sugar high. And then, they tell you, well, you'll get the square meal later. Mm-hmm. So because Harris has literally just stepped into the role, she hasn't had the runway in. So there'll be a lot of focus on her policies. There'll be a lot of looking at what exactly she is proposing. And I think it will get tough and it will get bumpy. And I think that's what Clinton and Obama and several other people were alluding to.
Now, Donald Trump had his first open-air rally since the attempt on his life, which, look, it's a brave thing to do, given that it's just a month since that happened in Pennsylvania. But I thought it was really interesting that he said that all of his advisors have said to him, stick to the policy, stick to the policy. And then he asked the crowd, but do you want me to carry on with the personal attacks? And they all cheered and said, yes, they did. And then he proceeded to attack Kamala Harris again.
Yeah, I think what the Democrats have done with Donald Trump at this convention has been very clever. They've painted him as, look, your act is old, it's tired, we're bored, you're just a mean-spirited, cranky old man. And instead of him defining Kamala Harris, they have redefined him. And I think that it just sounds tired now, that he's not bringing anything new. And the joyousness, we can talk about the lack of substance to some degree at the convention, which, as I said, is the norm. But the joyfulness and the exuberance, when you see that, and then you see Trump and at his rallies, and the mean-spiritedness and the vindictiveness, it really does draw a contrast. But again, I think that people shouldn't underestimate Trump's power and his ability to motivate his supporters. And let's not forget that they still believe the election was stolen in 2020, and they will be getting out there and they will be voting.
Well, look, as we've said before, the race really starts once tonight is done and once Kamala Harris has that speech out of the way. Then we get down to the nub of this, don't we?
Exactly.
All right. Well, we will await
a bumpy
ride from here on. It certainly will be, Marion. I know you'll be with us all the way. Thanks so much for joining us, Marion McKeown, their US correspondent from the Business Post.